Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood.
On Tuesdays, get your pop culture news and reviews with a pure Bostonian perspective on the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then on Thursdays, you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, presenting the Live Issues program.
It's going down each week. Only in the land of Ash, nerdcore at its finest.
What is up, everyone? King Baby Duck here, and welcome to the third part of our Anime Boston 2014 interview series. On today's episode, our special guest is the legendary Wendy Lee, who has played such iconic roles as Faye Valentine in Cowboy Bebop, Haruhi Suzumiya in The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya, and Kaola Sue in Love Hina. Outside of anime, she has also voiced roles in various Power Rangers series, Duck Dodgers, and the best mech cartoon America has ever made, Megas XLR, where she played the female hero Kiva. Her voice directing roles have had her behind the control booth for such series as Bleach, Outlaw Star, and the video game Katamari Forever, and her script adaptation work has helped bring Keras, Sakura Wars the Movie, and Mao-chan to English-speaking audiences. During this interview, I was accompanied by my pals from Wicked Anime and 42's Anime Reviews, along with folks from the Toonami Faithful Podcast, The Gag Order Network, IamThink.com, Anime Herald, and GameAndComic.com. It was a lot of fun, so check it out right now on B3's Anime Boston 2014 Interview Special with Wendy Lee.
So are all you guys regional? Is this all East Coast folks? Great. Gosh, there's so many things out there that I didn't even know about. It's just astounding how much anime has blown up, how it's such a permanent fixture of our culture now. It's great. Thank you for the part that you guys play in keeping stuff relevant and bringing it to the people and hopefully being kind once in a while with your reviews. We know sometimes you can't be.
You're still young.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Oh, I got time to make enemies. I know.
So
I know. I'll try and pose when I can.
So, looking back at Cowboy Bebop, what's it like to be considered in elite company with English dubs, especially with it being almost 15 years later?
Oh, wow. Well, you could just say elite a few more times today. That's great. I like it. That feels great. It's an incredible honor being associated with Bebop in any way, but to be able to carry the role of Feifei is one of the greatest honors of my career, hands down, for sure. I think that there is the greatest part of my personality or my spirit in that role than many of the other roles I've done. I just always felt like Bebop had such Western appeal. It feels so much like it's a show that could have originated here in the States. And the edge and the relevance of it and the timelessness of it, I think, is really translating. It's proving that it's still really current even now. I think it could carry on for some time. You know, if anything, it would be the actual art form has changed so much, has evolved, and as images are so much sharper as we're getting towards CG. But I'm very fond of hand-drawn anime, and I have so much respect for the love and care that went into that. Love the stories, love the story arc for Faye Valentine. Astounding. I get halfway into the series and then find out her whole backstory. You know, Speak Like a Child, everything that went into that is just an amazing thing to be involved with anything iconic with anime, but I take the responsibility seriously and I'm hugely honored.
I'm new to anime.
Oh.
So I guess you could say I'm popping my cherry lately.
Welcome.
I did a little research on you, and I read that you started doing voices in school, and you got in trouble for it.
Oh, yeah.
Could you touch base on that a little bit? Oh, story?
I was the sweet little girl that, you know, was very quiet in class, but as soon as the teacher turned around, I was throwing my voice over to the other end of the room, and she'd turn around, and I'd just be smiling and sweet, and after a while, even my teachers caught on to my repertoire of psychosis and all the voices in my head, And I remember at one point, I think it was my third grade teacher, Mrs. Carr, told me, "You will never amount to anything playing with those voices and making fun of people." And I thought, oh, yeah?
Look at me now.
Yeah, it was mischievous. I was always looking for an audience, and at the same time, many actors are actually kind of shy until you're behind a character that you can come, you know, fully into your comedic, you know, form in. And I just tried really hard to be a good student, but at the same time, I had an audience in a classroom. I wanted to entertain the class, too. So eventually I got to write, I think it was my fifth grade or sixth grade play, and I cast all my friends playing my characters, and they couldn't understand why I was so frustrated with them that they couldn't do all my voices, my Jersey accent and my British girl and my Southern kids, and they just couldn't understand, you know, I'm reading the lines, you know. So I was kind of a control freak even then. Directors.
What was your reaction to the immense impact that Cowboy Bebop had on the anime industry? Did you know going into the project that it was going to change and make waves, or were you sure of that at all?
We were completely shocked. I think everybody involved, because I got to do a little Cowboy Bebop reunion tour with Steve Bloom and Melissa and Bo, and we just were in, where were we? We were just in Birmingham, Alabama. It's the first place that ever has brought us all together, so now we're looking to be booked in other conventions as a foursome. And so now we're hearing our backstories between each other, and this question has come up a few times, and as it turns out, none of us knew that it was going to be a big deal, but every one of us were individually hugely impressed by the content, by the everything I outlined, the feel of the show, the edge, the banter, the science, and then the, you know, kind of the adventure, and how our characters had such growth in their story arcs and in their character arcs. So, not initially, but we were working with Bandai, of course, and Magnitude 8 and Animes, and our producer, Kevin Seymour, for Animes, is an icon in bringing anime to the States, and we just lost him. He just passed away quite suddenly just a few weeks ago, and we were at a memorial for him just last Sunday, and it was a mega gathering of all-star anime voiceover people and producers, and we were talking about how much Kevin regretted not being able to direct that show. It was one of the first shows he actually farmed out to some other directors. I was directing Outlast Star at the time, and he brought Mary Elizabeth on. That was the first show she'd ever done. And we were also working with Bridget Hoffman, and I think she was doing Fushigi Yugi at the time. And Leah Sargent had a show as well. So it was all an all-chick team of directresses, and we used to call ourselves Kevin's Angels. You know, we assume the poses, and have these conference calls with Kevin on the phone. But we were all very sorry Kevin wasn't a part of that particular series, because he has lent his expertise to thousands of shows, dozens and dozens of series, and I think it's something that he always kind of regretted, and, you know, just had a little piece of his heart was with us at all times in the show. But it just felt like we were onto something special, and we didn't know exactly how people would receive it. But I think it's one of the shows I anticipated the most, as I can't wait to hear what the audience has to say about this show. Yeah. I wish there was another season. That's the thing that I'm just heartbroken that, you know, it was short-lived, because there's so much more that we wanted to do with those characters, and I don't see why Spike couldn't come out the other end of that fire and smoke. It's, you know, whole and wonderful, like we do in so many other series. It's a deal. Thanks.
What was it like working with Spike, who traditionally in other anime is like the main girl, is kind of like a ditzy blonde, over-sexualized female, but Faye is appealing, but kind of in a different way. I was wondering if
that's probably why I connected with Faye so much, because she wasn't completely objectified. She objectified herself, and she took control of her sexuality and her sensual prowess, and I just thought she was so bright in balancing those things, and how she would turn it on and turn it off. And there's one scene in the film, the Cowboy Bebop feature, where she's in the arcade and she's with that guy who's gaming, and it's kind of a 3D holographic image, and she just starts coming on to this guy and just turns it up to 11. And I remember when we were recording that scene, you know, I'm doing my usual kind of, you know, sultry, you know, fey-fey thing. And they kept saying, no, no, sexier, sexier. And I'm like, okay, so I kind of went more Marilyn and breathy, and, you know, I'm like, no, 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 more, more, like, really push on, like, oh, okay, you want the X-rated version, and she ended up, like, you know, completely orgasmic, so it was great, but it was her way of baiting the guy and then moving in for the kill, and that's, she didn't have to pick up a gun to do it, and that was refreshing, that I was dealing with a girl who was so psychologically savvy, and yet played the, you know, the sexy part and still had her own demons and addictions with gambling and everything else and her love of money and the lengths she would go to achieve her objectives. I just thought she was refreshingly bright and captivating, and she always surprised me. That might be why women, I think, connect with her so much, is that she owned it, but she was tough, but she still had a super soft side, you know, if she'd let you in. And it was refreshing not to be the typical ditzy, well, you know, girl, like I've played a million of those, and I enjoy that ride too, but not like I have with Feifei.
Soon after I got into Cowboy Bebop, the next show that you were featured in that I became such a huge fan of was La Hina as a role
thank
of
you.
Paola Sue, who was one of my favorite characters on the show.
Thank you.
How did you decide upon the accent to use on Paola Sue?
Yes, I worked closely with the production team on that, and I appreciate your support of Love Hina. It was a controversial show because we did localize it quite a bit, and we didn't stick like glue to the Japanese with all of the content. But I got to work with the original Japanese director. He was present for the first volume of shows that we recorded when I was directing, and I adapted all of those episodes. And I deferred to the Japanese whenever I made changes that were more localized. I know there was one scene where Kitaro was his name, right? The lead. And what was our lead girl's name?
Naru.
Thank you. Naru, and she's running around, and there's a shot of her kind of bending over, and you hear his voiceover, and he's like, pink. And he's talking about her panties. And so I changed it to something else, and I proposed that to the director, and they're like, and he's like, yes, yes, I wish I thought of that. So he liked my changes because we weren't just speaking the obvious. It left a little more to the viewer, I thought, to connect the dots with, you know, his nasty thoughts or being perverted or whatever. As far as Paola Sue goes, that character was a character that I sort of petitioned for. I really wanted to play her. I just thought her pep and her Paola being so silly and being so over the top, and she was so funny. You know, just that whole energy thing. I really wanted to have a shot at, but I had to audition for it, even though I was directing. And with the production team, we decided that it would be best if she had some... Oh, actually, I almost forgot. They wanted that character to be Southern. Now, I don't know if it's because she had an Osaka accent or what the terms were now exactly, but I remember objecting to that pretty firmly. I was saying, I really don't think that's going to work. She's clearly ethnically diverse. She's got a nice blend going on, and she's exotic. So I'd much rather approach it with an exotic accent. And at first, they didn't like the idea. They translated it back and forth to the team many times. We were speaking via translator. And they finally said, well, what do you have in mind? I said, okay, well, let me go in the booth and show you. So I started busting out, you know, my kind of blend of a little bit of East Indian and a little bit of wacky and, you know, just everything that I did. And they were like, that's it. Let's go with that. And so they said, we're putting you in the role. So I was very excited about that. Yeah, yeah. I loved how her sister came in later on and I got to play her. And, you know, it's just this great, you just never knew what was going to happen with those kids. We just knew that they'd end up in the hot springs naked at the end. Yeah, that was a given.
So I think I can say with confidence that Faye Valentine has been like the schoolboy crush of most anime fans.
Ah.
Is there any particular character that you have come across in anime that you may have had a crush on?
Oh, well, Faye's my top crush, of course. She's my fangirl crush. There's been some really cool characters that I've been able to play. I you know, it's awful because when you go through a body of work that's traversed so many decades as mine, I don't always remember them at the top of my head, but I've always enjoyed the diversity of what I've been able to do. I'm not pegged as just, the ditzy girl or just the sultry thing or just the comedy thing. It's kind of everything. I've been able to really get my voices on, you know, and just build a huge collection of diverse characters. And for me, it's the diversity that I'm really challenged by and that I'm hungry for and keeps me interested in what I do. I love a good challenge, and I'm constantly challenged. I love a lot of my game roles. Black Rose is a really fun one. My attorney character, and oh god, I always keep forgetting this new one. Oh well, it'll come to me in a minute. I loved playing Yahiko in Kenshin. Yahiko, the Kamiya Kushin style, because he was so badass, and he wanted to fight. He had to fight with a wooden sword, but he wanted a real sword, Kenshin. So, like that, being able to play a boy that I would never be cast for on camera, love that. Being able to play a little TK on Digimon for a little tiny boy, I never got to play a little boy like him. I mean, I'd never get cast in anything like that on camera, so that's a blast. Playing the principal in GTO, playing Mrs. Sakurai and being able to be an older woman, you know, I'm not quite that age yet, but I can play one in animation, you know, all of that. That is a blast. Playing Tina Foster and I, Oriyoshi, you know, and being just the big dumb American with the supersized beer mug and the big old burger, you know, like just anything that I can sink my teeth into that's juicy, I love it. You know, even the Shura on Blue Exorcist that I'm working on, I love that. She's, you know, drawing a sword out of her chest. I mean, come on. I'd never play this stuff in life. It's great. It's the fantasy meets drama meets comedy that makes it the most rich for me as an actor.
You're one of the longest running actresses in the industry today, who's been around since the days of like Harmony Gold and Streamline even.
Right.
So you've definitely seen a lot happen to the industry as a whole. How would you say the anime world has changed since you started acting? And what would you say is the most positive, most surprising change that has come out in your career?
I'll start with the latter part of your question. The best thing that's happened is that it's blown up and that it's permanent. When we first started, people thought of anime as sort of a cult. Like, you know, very an offshoot of the industry of entertainment proper. And clearly it's a fan-driven art form, and it's here to stay. I mean, after all the downturns, ups and downs in anime doing well, anime being terminated, Toonami being closed, Toonami coming back, it's clearly because the fans keep it alive and the loyalty and the fact that we have contact with fans. When I first started, I had no idea where any of the work we were doing was going to end up. We used to laugh and say, well, here's one for the guys on the submarines. Or, you know, here's one for, you know, the guys in prison. I mean, we just didn't know where any of our content was going. There were no TV channels until Robotech got picked up in syndication. That was pretty cool. And just to see the evolution and to be a part of that and to maybe be a part of opening up the door for other women in animation is, you know, a huge honor. And I take that responsibility very seriously. And I'd like to think that I've kicked in another crack or two in the glass ceiling of women being directors and writers and being able to be taken very seriously as far as being able to play all genres. So that's really exciting. When I started, everything was analog. The technological aspect of recording was reel-to-reel, big, giant, half-inch reel-to-reel tapes, and they had to run past the tape heads, and then that had to be locked with the picture, and sometimes that you'd get a great take of something that you've recorded, and the machines didn't lock up, and you didn't catch it, so you'd have to do it again and again until things were all jiving. It was a really, really different way of working. Now it's super efficient. We're almost paperless in the studio. Almost all of our scripts are on either a monitor or an iPad, and it's more efficient, and that helps keep costs down, and I think that also has lent itself to being a more affordable art form, to be, have more projects greenlit. But there's been a huge evolution in animation and proper, and certainly in anime, and to be a part of the very beginning is, you know, it's pretty incredible when I think back on it now, and to have been so close to Carl Masek, who was so critical and instrumental in bringing anime from Japan, like meeting with folks in Japan and bringing it here and having that vision. And I just found out recently that Carl and Kevin worked together and knew each other very well. So, I mean, those two people catapulted my career. They picked me out of the chorus and put me in lead roles, and I'm eternally grateful. I feel so blessed.
Actually, very similar question. When looking through a lot of your past work, I noticed some of your video game voiceovers was, at least according to IMDb,
sure,
how accurate that can be. it goes as far back as 1994.
Yeah.
So you've been doing video game voiceovers since that was in its infancy as well. What was it like switching over? Was it a real learning curve because of how early on it was? And what have you seen change in that?
The advent of video games coming into popularity changed things for the voiceover community because it became a whole new avenue of work. So it was huge. And I felt like we were in such good position to take on fighting games and RPGs and everything in between because we'd been doing martial art fighting, voicing it for years, and we understood that language. You know, it's like the Japanese, Doryo, you know, all these different sounds that there are in Japanese are specific fighting moves. And to learn how to duplicate that stuff and be able to really sound badass, you know, convincing in a fighting title gave us a huge edge in Los Angeles, for sure, because we'd been doing so much of that already. But it was sort of akin to when I was a dancer and how classical dance was kind of growing stale and becoming less in style as I was an evolving and developing dancer. And once I was in the professional world exclusively and out of school and everything, there wasn't that much work for dancers. It was a really rough road, so I started choreographing. So I adapted to my art form, this dancing art form, the same way I did with animation. I diversified, so I'd be able to have a lot of work. So I knew that I wouldn't be a dancer forever. I didn't want to end up injured and unable to work, so I quickly became a choreographer. And I found I was actually a better choreographer than dancer. And so I felt like when Fame, the classic Fame title, came out, everybody wanted to be a dancer. Dance schools were flooded, studios were doing great, it was a boon to the industry. Same thing with music videos. Then dancers had a cool way to dance. It's like we didn't always have to be classical and perfect. We could be, you know, a little bit dirty and raunchy and sexy, and, you know, it was just a whole different genre that's still open to dancers. It was the same thing with moving from anime and animation into gaming. I felt like I had an epiphany. I could feel the same feelings that I had intuitively about the dance world with gaming, that this was a whole new huge avenue for actors for employment. And it came at a really great time because anime had been on a downturn again and things weren't going that well for acquisition. We weren't getting as many titles. But when the games hit, it saved people that were normally having to look for second jobs. It's not easy to work exclusively as a voice actor. It's very competitive. There's so many people out there, and half of the people out there want to in. So it's always, there's never quite enough work for all the talent that there is, so thank goodness for the games.
So, Steve Bloom has been a humongous cheerleader for Toonami pretty much since the beginning, like in 2000, 2001, something like that.
Toonami's been very good to Steve Bloom, yes. It's a beautiful match.
So, what are your thoughts on the blog and what it has done for anime in general?
On the blog?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know much about the blog, to be honest. I really don't. I haven't been involved with it. All I know is that Toonami loves the work that we've done. Almost every time I've teamed up with Steve, we've been in many, many shows together opposite each other. They play them all. Big O, certainly Megas XLR, was a huge part of Toonami and a really big part of my evolution in working with Steve, and we're both very sentimental about that one. GTO, What else? Outlaws. Oh, there's that. And we've had several times we've been teamed up. I've been teamed up with Johnny Bosch quite a bit, too. But I think Steve Bloom's my ultimate romantic lead. It's very good. My husband approves. So I don't know that much about the blog, but I'd love to know more. I'd love to be involved. I think it's great. Steve is just the natural fit for being a spokesperson for anime, and you know what's happening to his career, how he is just catapulting into Hollywood proper. You know, he's a downright rock star now. It's so great. Very proud of him. I know, we keep coming around already.
This is great.
Good.
Like it's been mentioned a few times in this room, you've been in this business for a while.
Yeah, a long time.
1981.
You know, I guess so. It's the first Robotech, so
really in its infancy.
Yeah.
Because I know back in 1981, I never heard of anime.
Either did I.
There you go. So you've been doing this for a long time. Was there ever a video game voice role or an anime role that got away, something that you wish you had?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there have been a few. There's been, really, as an actor, you want every role, and it's a numbers game, so the more you audition, the more you are cast. But I've been lucky that I've been just cast without auditioning for many roles, including Faye Valentine, and Haruhi and Haruhi Suzumiya and Konata. Several of the roles, my bigger iconic roles, usually it was Bandai. They've been so good to me, had me in mind, and just put me in the part. So I've been very lucky with that. But there's a few. There's a Perfect Blue was a real kind of dark film that I made with Kevin Seymour and Animes and Zero Limit. And I wanted to read for the lead role on that, and they would not let me. And I just couldn't understand it. I was furious. I said, what? I can't even audition. No, no. They had me playing the villainess. I played the antagonist in that. And in hindsight, sir, I got it as soon as we started recording it, that was really good for me. It stretched my range. And to be able to play a villain, somebody kind of grotesque, was a deep psychological study, and I really, really grew from that. I mean, it's always been, things always, I believe, work out for a reason. They always have an upside. I tend to be optimistic, but I'm certainly sardonic at the same time. But I find that any of the ones that got away usually present other opportunities. I was up for Bleach, lead character. What's her name?
Rukia.
Yes. In fact, I hear that I was cast for Rukia, but ironically, my producer petitioned to have me not be in that role because they wanted me to, because of being a bit versatile, they wanted me to play several other roles. So I instead ended up doing Yoruichi, so she was very close to kind of that Twilight Suzuka from Outlaw Star, and Feifei, she's kind of a blend of the two. And then I got to play, I'm still playing, little Uru who works in Kisuke shop, and I kind of came up with this new scratchy, don't hurt me, Jinta. This little voice, you know, so that stretched my range as well. And then playing Totsuki, you know, she was kind of the tomboy who, you know, trained Ichigo to be the good fighter that he was. And she's got a really cool story arc I just recorded a week ago where she's older and mature and completely different art design. It's incredible. So that opportunity turned into other opportunities, you know. So there's always a certain aspect of being an actor that requires that you have to be an adult. You just have to let things go and not get too hung up on the ones that got away and embrace the ones that do work out. But there's always a little bit of competition behind the scenes, like, did you find out who got cast in those roles? Oh, so the cast is final? I guess I didn't get anything. So there's like all this sort of anticipation to find out when the cast is released, who's in and who's out. And everybody wants to be invited to the party, you know? So if you're not in, it hurts. And, you know, you have to, put on your big girl pants and deal with it. You know, it's just part of the rejection of being an actor. And there's far more rejection than there are wins. So, you know, that's why I'm always telling the civilian world, you know, how hard it is to be an actor. And the actor's journey is really difficult. It's full of sacrifice. So do you have the thick skin? Are you somebody that can handle that kind of rejection and just muscle on, knowing that in your heart it's your passion and you're driven to do it? It's your calling, you know. I think to be in the press is a calling. I mean, don't you guys feel that way? There must be a lot of ups and downs for the work that you do as well.
I have no idea.
I mean, you have to really have thick skin. You have to know, when to...
And there's always somebody putting down your work.
Right.
You know, you go online and there's always someone saying you don't know what you're doing. They don't like it because you're doing it and they wish they could do it. There's always this there's this jealousy.
Yeah.
There's backstabbing sometimes in every genre of the entertainment.
King Vincent tells us no.
Yep. I mean, honestly, anybody's a critic with a computer now. And I don't think people realize how damaging it can be. I mean, my husband's really good about telling me not to read critiques categorically at all. Not good or bad. Just stay away from it all because it's really painful to hear people shred you to crap. I mean, it just hurts. And especially when I can't speak to it. I can't respond. It's inappropriate for me to get online as Wendy Lee and say, now, wait a fucking minute. You know? I gotta really watch it. I mean, that'll live in cyberspace forever. So, it's better, really, I think, not to believe the best of your comments or the worst of your comments. I give you guys that advice. Kind of listen to the stuff in the middle that's a little more rational and, you know, and hone your guard and your tough skin and try not to let it create an edge, you know, a chip on your shoulder because, you know, we need to be able to keep access to our creative roots to be good at what we do. And pain shuts that stuff down, mutes it. So, yeah, I encourage you guys to, you know, just be true to yourselves.
I just tell people, I say, you know, watch the show, come up with your own opinion. If you don't like it, that's fine.
Yeah, you start your own outlet. You start a publication. Let's see how well you do. Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, really.
You don't like it, don't tune in.
There you go.
There's an audience.
There you go. I don't know why there's so much hater. There's so many haters. And hate. I mean, especially online, it never used to be like this.
I just get along.
I don't understand the need to get out there and see who can throw more, you know, mud. I don't know. Honestly, we find when we get to the source of a lot of the haters, they're usually under 15. I mean, they're young kids. And these kids have no idea the influence that they're having on our careers at studios, where studios are listening to this stuff. And they kind of are in the business. They have to listen to it. We don't have to as individuals, but they can harm us. And I just wish people would be a little more responsible. But there are, you know, I also like to think for every positive comment you hear, there's probably 10 to, I mean, the studios actually have statistics on this stuff. There's like 10 to 100 other people that feel the same way that just didn't voice their opinion. So you just kind of hold on to the goodness when you can.
Just regarding the Valentine, because I'm pretty sure you would pick her, but if you could erase every memory of a role that you've done and go through the process of exploring that character again,
wow,
which one would you choose?
Oh my gosh. Wow. So, I know, and you have to understand, this is how actors feel. I went to a screening of August Osage County with Julia Roberts, and she did a Q&A afterwards, and she said what I always say, but she said it far more eloquently, and that is when they started asking her about her favorite roles and how she felt about it, exploring those characters. Those characters feel like your children. Like, they're so close to you, and there's like a piece of your DNA you leave with each of them, so it's really hard to get into the favorite thing, but Just to have the honor of like stepping into that person's life experience and be in their shoes and go through all their hardships and be able to walk away unscathed, you know, and richer for the experience is why I love being an actor. I mean, I'm in love with being able to experience as many lifetimes in this one life I've got as possible. So I mean, I take the responsibility deeply and very seriously, and it's there's been times in my life I've reflected on my work and wondered what is my contribution to the world. I really, you know, here I am just making cartoons, like what does this even matter? And you know, I could be doing something for the environment. I could be helping in so many other ways. I'm an activist in my own personal life, and I am involved with a lot of charities, and I do my own work, and many of us do. But when you get together with the fans and you see how it's affected their lives and how much good comes from creating a platform where people can experience psychology safely in other characters and identify with it and grow from that experience, then I know that I'm contributing to something that matters on some level. So any of the characters that I've been through that have that kind of a journey are you know, rock stars in my memory. You know, I love it. There's certain animation that's I'm more in love with the style than others. I just have so much appreciation for the art form as an art. You know, it's incredible to me because I'm creative in many ways, but I can't draw at all. And I have vision, and I wish, like, I'm working on a couple of my own little animated ideas, but I need artists to create the models and to build that stuff. And so I feel like I'm almost in a world of magic in many ways, and that I get to create magical stuff out of nothing, and at the same time I'm leaning on this, I'm hanging my art on somebody else's already completed vision, you know, as far as dubbing and working with in post-production with something that's complete already. So I don't think I answered your question at all, but I'm really close to these characters. You know, if you know, the best way for me is like if you tell me characters, then I can comment on those characters. But when I hold a record for the most animated characters an English actress has voiced. So I've got like over 300 different series. I mean, it's difficult for me to keep them all right, you know, right in my ear, but as soon as I see them, I'm so visual, it all comes right back.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I was wondering if you had a role that maybe was quite a challenge for you, that took a lot of effort to nail down the voice and
You know, honestly, you don't get cast in the roles that are difficult for you to pull off. You get recast in those roles. And I've been brought in to recast many other people's performances. It's not kind to mention which titles, so I won't, but there's a series I just finished that I was the third or fourth actor that they brought in to try to nail it down, and they finally went with me, and I was so honored that they gave me a shot, because they didn't give me a shot to audition for it originally. So, you know, it's interesting how producers and production post, how the post world sees you. They may not always see you for the role that in your heart you know you're right for. And then I've seen the opposite, where actors really petition for a character that they think they're right for, and then we get them in the booth and start laying it down, and it's just not working. Voice artists are pretty good about saying, I don't know if this is happening. You know, you guys may want to recast. It happens from time to time. You feel like you are completely defeated if you're taken out of a role. But I've been taken out of roles. I don't think in anime. I have in animation, but in original animation. But the things that are hard as an actor for me are the things that are difficult to sustain vocally. So Yahiko, I already did a demo of Yahiko, right? But he's like, you know, right in here. He's kind of grinding on my vocal cords and just sits right there. And he's just like, dude, you're killing me. You know, it's like, that's difficult to sustain for 4 hours at a time. So I dropped my sessions. I requested to have all those sessions only be two-hour sessions. So I'd still have something left to be able to work on other sessions of the day. Often a voice actor comes in one session in the morning, 2 hours, has a lunch break, goes to another session in the afternoon, and does another session after that. But to work an eight-hour day voicing is really, really tough. Games tend to be booked at more four-hour blocks, and then you really need downtime to rest your vocals. The characters that might be challenging for me are the kind of the more grotesque, stranger characters that I'm starting to venture into, but I want that challenge. I want to keep expanding my repertoire and develop new voices all the time. But actually, like, getting in there and like, ooh, this is hard, I've just never had that experience. What's hard is doing a high volume of work really fast and being on your toes and having that kind of energy. And since I'm prone to being kind of hyper, it lends itself to getting me through it, you know? Yeah.
A little while ago, Chris Kanowski, the creator of Vegas XLR, revealed that he has plans to revive the adventures of Coop, Kiba,
yes!
And Jamie. And I'm just curious, have you heard anything new about this? If there's
Very little. I've heard very little, but I've been been back in touch with Chris and Jody, the animator as well, and they're working. They have a new production house that they have been working on, and I know only by some of the stuff they've been saying on Facebook did I know that was a potential or a possibility. I certainly see a lot of people thumbs upping the thought of more Megas XLR. like me, over and over and over. I often post stuff on my Facebook page just to kind of keep the energy alive and keep the interest up. Cartoon Network told us at the time that robot shows, mech shows, weren't popular, that they had kind of been played out. And then after we finished our second season of Megas, there were several other mech shows that came up thereafter. So we really feel like we didn't get a shot at our prime window to bring all the content of that show to life. And I would really love to see that because it's such a beautiful co-production with Madhouse in Japan and Cartoon Network here and set in Brooklyn. Come on. So cool.
And one of the most original mech series in my opinion.
Right?
It was such fun.
The humor was so good. I mean, you know, Tom Kenny was guest star on our show. You know, all these celebrities were guest stars on our show.
Bruce Campbell.
Yes! I mean, we had, you know, everyone in animation eventually made their way in there from the big time. The big, you know, I'm not part of that animation Saturday morning proper American. That is a whole other level of competition and politics that I've just not been able to really crack, but I'm always there, always trying. And to have it reversed, that they come and guest on my show is like, what? You know, that's just insanely wonderful and a great honor. So yes, I hope it happens. I know they have a tremendous, they had story arcs for I think 4 seasons completely fleshed out when I auditioned for the show. I mean, I remember going through their packet just looking at episode after episode, all these outlines for stories that are hysterical. I mean, the humor on the show is so great. Yeah.
So, because you've been in so many voice roles throughout your entire career, is there any particular role that you wish got more recognition from the fans?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm sure there is, and I'm just completely blanking. I mean, like, right now when I think of my characters, I can only think of a handful, and I've got 300, you know, something like that. There's been many. I kind of wished Vampire Hunter D had more going on because I really love Charlotte. She was so beautiful and tragic, and she was so full of pathos. You know, I kind of wanted to see her get to the next level. That would have been really cool. I've done some comedic characters that were kind of smaller roles. I'd love to see them be developed more. So many.
Thoroughly entertained by Maha Romantic.
Oh! What a trip, right? Yes, exactly. And then there's some like, you know, the teacher in Dears, where it's like, guys, she's had enough to say. I just sort of see her foot in the air. So she's, yeah, you know, I'm not good with character-specific questions like that because you'd have to throw out the characters. There's so many that I've done. But really, anytime you're really attached to a character, you're feeling it, and they're taken out or you don't see them again, it hurts. You know, you miss them, you want them to come back.
As you mentioned several times, you've voiced over 300 characters. You've pretty much been in so many pivotal roles throughout the years, from Dragon Ball to...
Oh, that's right.
And I'm really...
I love that. No, it's great.
From Dragon Ball to Haruhi Suzumiya to so many other shows, Cowboy Bebop naturally. How does it feel to be one of those voices that's really ushered in fans generation after generation after generation?
Oh, that's so great. Thank you for saying that. It feel, you know, really, how many times have you heard me say how honored I am? I mean, I feel like I was given an incredible opportunity at the right time, and it's so interesting because I remember being in junior high school and having a civics teacher, of all people, make us contemplate where our lives were going, and we had to draw out an outline for where we would be in the next 5 years, the next 10 years, and the next 15 years. And it's really interesting because I remember writing, we had to describe what kind of car we would be driving, where we'd be going to school, what kind of work we would do, and I remember writing this essay basically about where I saw myself professionally, and I was dead serious about being an actor, and I was very shy about letting people know about it because I wanted to be taken seriously, and I didn't feel like people would take me seriously until I actually had working actor credit. I starred in our high school shows, our junior high school musicals. I got Best Actor awards then and all that, but I was a little tiny pool where I could be a big fish. So I didn't know people would take me seriously as pursuing it for life, but I knew that's where my life was going some way, somehow. And I remember describing this strange place that I would be in the entertainment industry. It's almost like I had a psychic hit about it, because I remember saying it wouldn't be your average kind of acting job. It would be something unusual involved in post-production, and that I somehow would be a working actor. I would be very busy, but I would have many other things that I would be doing in my industry and hopefully directing. And I included that I would be a choreographer and that I would be singing, and that I really wanted as many job opportunities as I could in the entertainment industry. And boy, if that didn't happen, I should have been more specific and said I wanted to be a rock star, a star of films. But I've come to terms with that, you know, and people in animation tend to have egos a little more in check, because we don't have to be in the front, in the limelight, the star of the show. We're pretty cool being behind the scenes and, you know, laughing in the studio and having fun creating clever outtakes. Yeah, right? Oh, my God. I mean, just one of those and you'd never work again. I mean, you just, there's too many other people that want to take your job at any given moment, you know? So, yeah, I feel like I don't even know how it all really happened. I can deconstruct it on some level and tell you guys how I got here, but the truth is I feel very guided. I feel like something much bigger at play in my destiny brought me to where I am, and I take it seriously, and I'm so grateful I can help other women achieve even better goals than mine, you know, or more. And I'm seeing them come up now. I mean, like, they're starting to come up the ranks, they're catching up to my credit list, and oh, look at that. Pretty soon I'll be going, go. Yeah. Okay, I'll join the press. That's probably where I'll retire. You're right. Thank you.
One of the more recent video game roles you had was in the DuckTales Remastered.
Oh, that's right.
And it was one of those where it was one of the few, if not only, new additions. They got as many of the original cast as possible.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I was going to say, by the look, you may not have been aware of that.
No.
Well, this will be interesting then. So what is it like now to find out that you were one of very few people who were asked to be new on that?
That's incredible.
Every original person they could get, they got.
That is so cool. That came through my agency, and it was a voice match gig, and I'm a little minor bird, you know, I'm a good mocker, so I can voice match quite a bit. I do a lot of voice matching, more than people would even imagine, just because I happen to be behind the scenes directing. I happen to be there, so if there's a missing line and we're on a deadline and we can't bring the actor back, also, let me try and voice match it. And so I'll jump in the studio, and I know how to work with the engineer to drop in a word, and I'll say the line that the actor's saying, but maybe there's just one word that's wrong or a pronunciation or something. So I'll speak along with the character until it matches pretty well, and then they'll just cut that one word in. And I can get that close that it sounds sonically similar. So that, I think, helped me a lot for becoming a good voice matcher. And Mrs. Beasley, I mean, she's right there. She's not too far from my, you know, from my Mrs. Sakurai and GTL. And I also do a very proper queen, and I often get her cast into different shows. So Mrs. Beasley wasn't far from that. But I studied the voice samples that they sent me, and I was just like, I want this so bad. I can do this. I've got this. And, you know, I try not to get attached to the characters I'm reading when I'm auditioning, because so many of them come and go. But that one, I thought, nah, I think I've got an advantage on this one because of all my skill with and experience with voice matching. I didn't realize anybody that was one of few replaced voices, and it's probably because the actress outlived the part. You know, she probably, yeah, the character outlived the actor. So, again, you know, such respect and homage to the original actress who set the bar very high. You know, I am... That's the animation I grew up on. I'm a fan of Hanna-Barbera and Warner Brothers and the Roadrunner and the Jetsons and the Flintstones. And, you know, those are my iconic characters that I grew up with, that I was running around the house as Judy Jetson, you know. Right, Father, here I come. You know, I mean, I've been cast, playing, stealing, ripping off from Judy Jetson for many years. There's a little of that in Haruhi. So, yeah. But I didn't know that. They probably brought back everyone they could, and they just couldn't catch that actress. Oh.
Yeah, she had passed away.
That's so sad. Yeah, I do remember hearing that. And also, the production team, Disney, said that they were going to make more content. So I'm surprised I haven't heard from them yet, because it's been a good year, 2 years, I think now. Yeah. I think I did it in January a couple years ago. So,
oh, yeah, probably since recording. Right?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm getting good comments about that, nice feedback. So I would think the fans would be asking for more. So let's hope. Fingers crossed.
As the voice of Haru Suzumiya, I'm just curious about what you thought of how the fandom exploded in the anime industry of Metroid Haru Suzumiya, even before the show even got licensed in America.
Honestly, I don't know. I don't quite get it because I love her because she's into time travelers, espers, and, you know, shapeshifters. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is perfect. Ancient aliens. I love it. I don't really get it because it seems like another high school drama to me, or comedy. It's got both. And I see the series very much through her perspective, that she doesn't know she controls the universe or the world or any of that. I just see her as kind of a pushy, confident, cute, you know, peppy girl. So it's shocking to me. I was seeing the merchandise before I even started the series. So I thought, okay, that's a sign. That's going to be really popular. Why do you think it's popular?
I just thought it was a very, very unique take on the story.
Yeah.
Not to mention just the way it was, you know, broadcast. It was all out of order. No,
right.
Done that before. It was just more of a unique take, and it was refreshing in the anime industry, and it's still one of my favorite anime series out there. In fact,
fantastic.
We're called Boston Bastard Brigade because of the SOS Brigade.
Yes, baby. I like it. Thank you. Thank you so much for spending an hour with me and for all your great questions. Thank you.